Well, good morning and welcome to Unfettered Thought. My name is Maura Cullen and I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to explore one of the less examined parts of our community. I'm talking about non-believers, also known as non-theists or atheists. There are a great many of them here in Portland and in Oregon and indeed throughout the nation and the world, but you don't hear from them very often. So I'm very pleased that KABU allowed me this opportunity to see if I can't get to know some of you out there and also provide a forum for people to express their thoughts about religion and non-religion. I'm an atheist myself. I have been all my adult life. I'm not a professional atheist in any sort of manner. I don't write a column about it or I'm not a member of any organization like that. I'm just a person, a KABU volunteer who had this thought and was able to bring it to fruition because we're so fortunate to have our very own listener-run, volunteer-supported radio station. So here we go. As I said, my name is Maura, and I'm not a professional atheist. I'm just a person. I grew up a Roman Catholic, and I guess you could call me a recovering Catholic. It's sort of a lifelong thing. And I guess I'd like to start by dedicating this program to a great man and a great atheist, a man who's taught me more than I can express on my long, wonderful and ongoing journey towards human maturity, and helped me discover the most liberating truth I have yet to find, that at the end of the day, the only judgment that matters is your own. Thank you, Donovan, for everything. Now, to get started, I guess I could start with a dictionary definition of atheism. And, of course, the first place I went was Wikipedia, that pop dictionary on the internet. And they say that atheism is broadly defined as the rejection of belief in deities. And I found this description interesting because it speaks to the assumption that the normal default position is religiosity, that this is a rejection of something, instead of simply the fact that perhaps someone just grew up never coming to a belief in a supreme deity. There are many people who have been atheists all their lives, and there are those who have come to it later on in their life. But there are certainly a lot of misunderstandings about what atheism is and is not. Perhaps we should start with that. One thing atheism is not is devil worship. Atheists are not Satanists. It is not the opposite of Catholicism or any Christian or Judaist religion. It is simply the lack of a belief in a supreme deity. Now, this can take many forms, and it certainly does. That's why I was at pains to explain that I'm not a member of any atheist organization, because I really, to me, that would be like trying to herd cats, you know. It's a matter of very personal philosophical feelings, and I've always actually felt that those kinds of feelings are best not proselytized about. But here I find myself on the radio talking about them, so figure that one out. You know, what proselytizing is one thing, explaining and communicating for understanding is another. And atheism is, so it is not devil worship, it is not paganism, it is not a club or a religion. It is simply a term that you can use to define any number of different sorts of people. Some people are very radically atheist. Some people simply have given up their earlier religious beliefs and don't make a big deal of it. But I would be interested to hear from some of our listeners as to their own impressions on atheists, whether they are themselves a believer or not. I have found that the kind of misunderstandings that are common often serve to create an atmosphere of bigotry against atheists. A lot of people think atheists have no morals. And, you know, that in particular is something that I am at pains to try to explain to people, how it is possible to be godless and moral at the same time. It's not only possible, it actually makes a lot of sense. I understand we have a caller already. And Fred is on the line. And welcome, Fred. You're my first caller. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Great show. Thank you very much for the clarity. I have been involved with the humanist organizations in the Portland area. And humanism is a form of non-theism that is basically... the philosophy is that humans need to take responsibility for the actions that they perpetrate without having dictates by some imaginary figures that are in the sky. And in doing so, we feel that we will be able to reach rational results and be more in tune with the world and our place in it. Basically, that's the kind of the long and the short of the humanist philosophy, is that we do things that we feel are right because they are right, not because we are threatened by some punishment or whatever. And it is a rapidly growing segment of the population. And there are several groups. Center for Inquiry is one. The Humanists of Greater Portland is one. And what I'd also like to talk about is I have been actively involved in the first ever Portland Humanist Film Fest, which is going to be taking place this coming October. It's very exciting. It's a three-day event. And... for anyone who's interested, our website is humanistfest.com, and we have prided ourselves on a choice of films that will relate to not only those who are already there, you know, in thought as humanists, mm-hmm. but people who are curious, who want to know, who want to go outside of the box of religion. There are films on sustainability, films on the human quest for equality, that sort of thing, religious inequities, and there are some humorous films. We're going to have a kickoff night with Life of Brian costume.
That's great.
Costume gala. So the humanist...
and when is this taking place again, Fred?
This is this October 8th. 9th and 10th. First night will be Clinton Street Theater.
All right. Good venue.
Yeah, and then Saturday and Sunday, the 9th and 10th, will be at the Fifth Avenue Cinemas, because one of the underwriters is also the Freethinkers of Portland State University, which is a student non-theistic group. So we're very excited. It's a big event. It's probably the biggest secular event that Portland's ever seen, and it's being contributed to by a number of secular organizations, including CFI and the Humanists of Greater Portland and the Freethinkers. There are a couple of atheist groups that are involved, and Just Out magazine is underwriting one of the films.
Oh, great. And, well, that's great, Fred. You know, I couldn't have asked for a better first caller. I'm very glad to have connected with you and let people know about this film festival. Again, the website is humanistfest.com. And, boy, I can't wait to come check it out and meet some of my fellow humanists, which is another name for non-theists. And I'm glad that you brought that to people's attention. How many people do you think you have in your group here in Portland?
Well, I know that CFI, the Center for Inquiry, which is a worldwide organization, and they just started a Portland chapter here about 3 years ago. And according to what I hear from the those in charge, Portland is the fastest growing chapter ever in the history of CFI. And already we have close to 1,000 people that are involved. They're not all dues-paying members, but they are involved in the activities,
right,
and checking in on the websites and putting input into it and so forth. And the Humanists of Greater Portland is also a large organization. And they've been around for a long time, and I know they have several hundred members. And then there are smaller groups like Beaverton Atheist Meetup, a group on the east side called SHEP, which is Secular Humanists of East Portland, Flying Spaghetti Monster, which gets together and does the bar scene, and the Jewish secularists called Kol Shalom. So there are several thousand people involved, and it is growing.
Well, thanks very much for your information, Fred. Thanks for calling in today.
Okay, great. Well, great to have this show on. Thanks a lot.
All right. And let's take another call. We have Carla on the line. Carl.
Okay, so here's a little, my notion is, I'm 67 years old and I haven't been a believer. I finally figured it out when I was about 21. And the best analogy or metaphor for that I can think of is that religions are drugs.
Well, it was Karl Marx that said religion is the opiate of the masses.
Right, okay.
Right.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. And, you know, provable knowledge. I get a little thing, a scrib I'll read here if I may.
Sure.
Provable knowledge from farming to pharmacology is analogous to food. Religions, then, are analogous to drugs. Light drugs, heavy drugs, hard drugs, soft drugs, good drugs, bad drugs, painkillers, palliatives, placebos. Religions are drugs.
Very interesting, Carl. Thank you for that comment.
Sure.
All right, you're listening to Unfettered Thought here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, your listener-supported radio. I'm Maura Cullen, and we are talking today about atheism, what it is, what it isn't. And, you know, we're also going to talk about religion and what it is and what it isn't. Carl mentioned that a lot of people feel that religion functions as a drug. And Fred, our first caller, mentioned that sometimes people use religion as an escape from responsibility. I've certainly witnessed both of that happening, and it can be a problem. One of the problems that I have as a non-theist with people who are extremely religious is that they tend to have that be at the center of their worldview, and tend to look towards religious solutions to human problems. I've always been frustrated by people who suggest using prayer in a human crisis, when really what's needed is for people to put their heads together and come up with human realistic solutions. You know, prayer may work very well as a meditation, and indeed any sort of meditation can bring feelings of calm and also relieve fear and uncertainty. Certainly, you know, there have been lots of studies done and scientific studies about the efficacy of prayer, and no one has yet found it to be efficacious in any other way other than as a form of meditation. So, you know, those are a couple of things to think about when discussing religiosity versus non-belief. And I think we have another call, and I think it's Per on the line. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning to you.
Good to hear you.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I don't believe in Zeus. Does that make me an atheist?
Yes, I guess so.
At least in terms of Zeus.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, what theity are we talking about? You know, it's sort of all relative in a way.
Indeed, that's a very good point you bring up, and it helps people to broaden out their understanding. Let's think about all the different gods people can believe in, your own personal God.
And even within what's called the Christian faith, you know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different versions of the deity there.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's, you know, the angry old man with the sword, and then there's, some English bishop once thought of God as a vague, oblong, purplish blur. You know, I mean, so it's all these different things. I mean, I don't know, I think in a way that, you know, you read the story of the creation, and I think just quantum physics is more awesome and awe-inspiring than anything you see in the Bible, you know?
Well, there you go. You're a man after my own heart.
You know,
I've always felt that if I felt the need to worship anything, it would be physics.
What about the Big Banger, you know?
Right.
Not the British sausage, you know? The Big Bang. Whatever. Did something start the Big Bang going or what?
Well, that's it. That's it. What existed before the Big Bang?
No one knows.
No.
Evidence was all burned up, I guess.
Well, you know, there's an old saying in Ireland that says there'll be time enough to worry about these things after you're dead. And I always thought that was pretty good advice because we are, after all, talking about the realm of the metaphysical where none of us can be sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, perhaps it's best to spend a little less time worrying about the afterlife and a little more time worrying about the life we have here.
That's true, but you know, people might think about exactly what is consciousness. You know, what is a thought?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have a thought. I mean, I can't see it. I can't touch it. It's, you know, it's kind of totally unphysical, but it's there because I got it. You know,
right?
Well, does the brain produce that thought? You know, I mean, is the brain some kind of mystery meat that makes thoughts, or? Are the thoughts out there, and the brain is like a radio receiver? I mean, these are different ideas you can have about it. But, you know, I majored in philosophy. I guess you can tell that, you know, for, you know, a couple thousand years, philosophers have really grappled with this whole thing about the, you know, the mind and the body.
Right.
And they haven't really come up with any explanation, you know. It's just kind of, there it is.
Well, I will tell you my own experience with anesthesia, having gone through a number of surgeries recently. You know, they call it the little death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the strangest sensation to lose that time. Because when you go to sleep and dream, mm-hmm. you still, when you wake up, you have the sensation that time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But when you wake up from, or when you recover consciousness from anesthesia, being, you know, basically chemically knocked unconscious,
mm-hmm.
you don't get the sensation that any time has passed at all.
No, you wonder if you had any surgery. When is the surgery going to happen?
Exactly. I've done that several times. You know, when are we starting? And they laugh. But it's this feeling like, you know, where did I go? Where was I?
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly makes you wonder about the nature of consciousness.
Well, you know, I knew a woman who actually, she was an atheist herself. She was a communist, I believe. And she told me one time when she was having her youngest baby, and she was, you know, in the hospital, and she sort of found herself kind of looking down from the ceiling at herself in bed, holding this little child. And she was thinking, you know, while up there by the ceiling, you know, I can't leave this little kid with no mother.
Sure, there are plenty of stories like that.
And then she went back, you know, kind of, you know, rejoined herself, as it were. And, you know, I mean, it's just so... If she actually saw herself, she was seeing herself or without eyes or whatever, because her eyes were down below in the bed with the body, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a very interesting experience. I suppose, you know, I've heard different explanations of that kind of thing, you know.
Right. And I think as we go on with this program, if we're able to continue, mm-hmm. I think we'll start exploring some of those things in depth. You know, sometimes people wonder about out-of-body experiences and those kinds of, you know, metaphysical experiences people can have certainly had an effect on why religious belief is so strong in humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our desire to perceive things as miraculous. There are lots of different human nature things that, you know, would tend to make you possibly lean towards a belief in a deity. But as we will examine in coming weeks, hopefully, there are a number of different explanations for that. One interesting one that I have found, and gosh, I'm not sure if it was Richard Dawkins, or yeah, I think it was Richard Dawkins, talked about perhaps some of these religious feelings that we sometimes have, as convinced as we may be of their genuineness, are sometimes just evolutionary misfires, and that our brain and our physical being is set up in such a way that these are just kind of side effects of how our brain and our body function, and it affects our perception of the world. So that's an interesting subject in itself, and something that mm-hmm. we will definitely be going into in more detail.
Well, then there's these near-death experiences. You know, my late mother-in-law had one herself, you know, a near-death experience. And this guy, this was about 15 years ago, maybe longer than that, a fellow named Raymond Moody. He was some kind of a doctor or something, and he collected all these experiences and sort of tried to frame them in some sort of, I don't know, categories, you know, describe them and stuff. And, you know, a lot of them, they had similarities. And these were people who, some people who had these experiences were religious and some weren't, or they had different religions. And there were certain similarities to this experience, you know. And, of course, you can say, okay, well, this is something. In fact, I think somebody said, well, this is what happens when the brain decomposes or something like that, you know.
Yes.
But in a way, you know, you do this Occam's razor logic thing.
The simplest explanation is usually the best.
But then why is the brain decomposition explanation simpler than just saying, hey, consciousness goes somewhere and we don't know where, but, you know, why should it... you know, everything else gets recycled. Why not consciousness?
Hmm, you know? That's a good point, Per. I like that.
And I just with this that actually Sir William of Ockham, who invented Occam's razor,
right.
himself was a Catholic monk.
That's right.
Back in the Middle Ages.
That's right.
Anyway, interesting discussion, and it could go on. I hope it goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Me too. Thanks for joining in.
Okay, bye.
Take care. And you're listening to Unfettered Thought here on KBOO. Do give us a call and tell us what you think about this subject. 231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And let's see, a couple of things we've talked about is responsibility, the nature of consciousness. And Per brought up at the beginning, which God makes you a theist or a non-theist? You know, it doesn't seem strange to people these days to not believe in, say, the Roman pantheon or the Persian gods or, you know, a great many of religions that have perhaps lost favor, lost devotees, become less popular for whatever reasons. And, you know, we don't consider it a moral crime to give up these beliefs. And indeed, you know, I think the more we learn, the more we communicate in this age of the internet, we're being able to reach out in new and exciting ways to people from different cultures with different faiths or perhaps no faith at all. And certainly science has enabled us to think about the world in entirely new ways. I think that science has a lot to do with the growing number of non-theists that there are in society. We've been able to come up with explanations for some of the more terrifying things that happen in our world. And the more that we're able to explain it, the less we feel the need to give it a supernatural explanation. I think that this is important and healthy and will aid towards humanity, hopefully saving itself from its worst excesses, some of which, admittedly, are brought on by religion. You know, I certainly don't have to tell anyone at KABU about all the different religious conflicts that go on in the world. I've been particularly close to one, and that is the conflict in the north of Ireland. Now, I do, on my other KABU show, Radio Free Ireland, take some pains to explain that the conflict is not a religious conflict at its base. It is basically a conflict over power and land. However, religion is used very successfully as a tool of division between two groups of people who really have a great deal in common. And, of course, this divide and conquer mechanism has been used since the dawn of time to maintain political power. You know, the Catholics and the Protestants in the north of Ireland have been struggling for years over very minuscule religious differences, and yet it comes to violence. Okay, we have a couple more calls, and let's go to our first caller. Hello.
Hello?
Hello there, you're on the air.
Oh, glad to talk to you about this this great subject. I'm a Native American. I believe in spirituality, whether mm-hmm. it's Mother Nature is pretty much the god of choice, because we believe that every living thing is a spirit, whether it be living or dead. And how we celebrate it is just like you would celebrate, say, a wake, because mm-hmm. you're celebrating the happiness and in the death at the same time.
Okay, well, I appreciate you calling in to talk about that. Can I ask you, is this something that you grew up with from as a child, or is it something you came to later in life?
Later in life, my mother passed away about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I became a spiritualist way before that. I was raised a Baptist Christian in the South.
Uh-huh.
Different, of course, you know, more strict.
Right, certainly very different than most Native American religions I'm familiar with.
Yes, and our thing is that, you know, organized religion has really, really spoiled a lot of people. Because for me, I don't believe in it, because it's just organized religion is for people that want to believe in an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Mormon, for an example. How many times do you have to write the Book of Mormon to make it make sense?
It's a good question. You know, one of the central questions I guess we're going to be struggling with on this program is the difference between religiosity, organized religion, and spirituality. And indeed, do you even need to have a belief in God to be a spiritual person? I think that's an interesting question, and you know, there are different forms of spirituality. Worship is just one form. I believe that getting in touch with one's own consciousness and thinking about how one goes through the world is another form of spirituality. But I don't think that using the term spiritual necessarily means that you have a belief in a supreme deity.
Well, the concept is that if you believe in a higher being, and there was no proof of ever this higher being ever brought forward, mm-hmm. whether it's Jesus Christ, our Savior, our Lord, which one are you gonna praise to? Are you gonna praise to all three of above?
Well, how about praying to none of them? How about just respecting the idea, but not feeling the need to worship, which. Basically, my understanding of worship is a form of obeisance, a form of obedience where you put that person or that idea ahead of your own self. And I guess it's the concern about the sacrifice of one's autonomy that
right.
concerns me most about organized religion, when there's someone else telling you how to believe.
Well, that's true. For an example, real quickly, I was married to a Catholic. I was baptized a Catholic and never really understood why I had to convert. And then the second thing is that it just felt like, okay, I can't do this, I can't do that, but I can do this. But I have to ask God that if it's okay for me to do.
And I think it's a much healthier, more balanced place to be if you can get those answers from yourself.
Well, of course, but you don't need a God to tell you what you need to do and what you don't have to do when you're married.
Right.
Even when you're not married.
Right. No, certainly if you're an adult human being, you should be able to work these things out for yourself. Of course, using for guidance whatever your own system of values is.
Well, a God doesn't need to tell you to not use birth control. A God doesn't have to tell you to have, unfortunately, sex with your wife or your significant other. You don't have to ask God for that.
Right. Okay,
and
well,
that's what's happening in most religions. They say, oh, it's bad, it's taboo. Well, okay. How are you ever going to be intimate with each other other than asking God to say, hey, is it okay?
Ah, yes. Well, certainly we'll be talking about religion's effect on sex. Thanks very much for calling. I'd like to try to get to a couple more calls, okay?
Thank you. Good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Next caller, hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Sue Supriano. Well, I really appreciate this discussion, which could go on forever, I'm sure. And maybe it will. And I certainly am a spiritual seeker. And my conclusion at this moment, and I started out in a Christian community with a Christian, you know, going to a Christian church. My family wasn't particularly religious, so it didn't get shoved down my throat really in any way. But I've always been a spiritual seeker since I was a child, and I gave up Christianity pretty early on because I could see so much the disconnect between people, what people said and what they did.
A lot of contradictions.
I found that as well. It always couldn't be the case. And then I moved on to many other things, and I've probably spent many other spiritual paths, and some organized and some just not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've studied and actually made a radio documentary on Buddhism in the United States. So I've studied a lot of, not just because of that, but I've been mostly involved in Buddhism, which, of course, is atheistic. There's really not, I mean, it may be in some popular forms looking like you're praying to a higher being, but that's not really how Buddhism is.
Well, the one thing that I took away early about Buddhism that I really liked was a saying, and I'm hoping it's genuine, it's been told to me, that Buddha said, I am the finger pointing the way. Follow the way, not the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked that. I thought that was, a nice philosophy. But we'll definitely be talking more about Buddhism as well. And I'd like to be able to devote a whole show to each of the major religions in turn so that we can really get into them, because there's an awful lot of misconceptions about Buddhism, and I still have a bit to learn myself.
Right. Well, I'm also around KBU, so maybe we can have a discussion about this sometime, you and I.
Aye, that'd be great. Yeah,
I'd be happy to help on that.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks for doing the show.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too.
Do we have another caller?
Katrina,
good morning and welcome.
Hello, I'm so excited that the show is going on. So the last two callers actually really touched on what I was going to ask questions about, because I'm sort of new to the concept of atheism. I mean, I obviously kind of always knew what it was, but it's never been something that has affected me personally until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you grow up in a particular faith?
Oh, yes, very Christian.
Uh-huh.
Basically, what I'm running into is there's a lot of feelings that I have, and the people that I'm close to are people that I read, where it's like, well, I'm atheist, except that I have all these other spiritual beliefs that have nothing to do with God,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if that contradicts itself or if it actually kind of works, or maybe it hasn't been defined yet, or maybe it needs a new name. Donna Barr, the Pacific Northwest author, she says that she's atheist, except that she also believes in ghosts and and nature spirits. It reminds me of both Shinto and voodoo a little bit, in the fact that, like, well, there's a big god, but we don't deal with him. And she went out saying, you know, all of the gods that I've read about throughout all of history, they're all kind of jerks. So they don't deserve my worship. And you know, that's kind of one way. Is that really atheist, or is that something else? Or,
well, I think
I'm kind of running into the same thing. Is
right. Well,
is
first I want to say welcome to the world of atheist thought, and keep going with your explorations. And I think that at the end of the day, you have to make the meaning for yourself. The main point of being an atheist, for me anyway, I'm just speaking personally, is hewing to my own judgment and taking responsibility for what I think and for my actions. And nobody can define that for you. You know, if you feel that you don't believe in a supreme being, but you still have a lot of, say, cultural connections to the religious world or the spiritual world, it's up to you to decide how much you want to make of that. I don't think there's any litmus test for atheists that, you know, if you believe in this, then you're not a real atheist. You know, for instance, I put up a Christmas tree every year, you know, and, you know, I pretend it's because I'm celebrating the season, and really that is why, but certainly I know where it originally came from in my own tradition. You know, originally the Christmas tree was a pagan celebration implement, and it was, of course, commandeered by the early Catholics as a way to endear themselves to the pagans, and now has come to represent Christmas in a big way. But I'm not ashamed to do that because of my cultural history and because I find it enjoyable. It doesn't make me confused about my beliefs. It doesn't make me, you know, like weaken or want to go back to church or anything like that. It's just sort of an amusing cultural hangover that I allow myself. So, you know, it's one of the things I love about atheism is that it is so loosely defined and can mean so many different things to different people.
Well, excellent.
Does that help?
It does.
All right.
I have one more thing to add, though. It's
sure.
Really short. I'm in the middle, or actually the beginning, of reading this book by Michio Kaku. It's called Hyperspace, and it's about, we'll call it the fourth dimension. It's actually about all 10 of them, but
yes,
whatever.
I remember anyway, Michio when he used to work at WBAI back in New York when I was back in Manhattan.
Oh, isn't he incredible?
Yes, he is. He's wonderful. Go on.
But there's just so much realm for possibility. There's so much that we don't or can't, as three-dimensional beings,
right,
understand about the nature of the universe. I mean, the things that people are experiencing and call miracles, there's no way of knowing whether or not those are just completely natural occurrences because one or two of the dimensions have collided at
right.
some point, on, you know, for a moment.
Right.
So there's just so much we don't know and can't assume that we do. And, yeah, the universe is a really amazing place. I think it was, oh, shoot, the fellow who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Douglas Adams.
Like, Adams.
Yep.
Right? He said something fabulous. Is the beauty of the garden lessened because there aren't fairies at the bottom of it or something like that? And he's right. I mean,
right.
The universe is magical and amazing and jaw-dropping enough without needing some kind of outside source.
All
anyway,
right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Katrina.
Yeah.
I think we have a couple more calls. All right. Hello, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you. I was hoping we could have call-ins and discussion and any of your views on my kind of joking description of why I'm not an atheist. And the joke mainly goes, I'm just not certain enough about my religion to be an atheist.
Kind of like the old saying, better to believe in God and find out you're wrong after you're dead than not believe in God and find out you're wrong after you're dead.
Yeah, right. That's a real joke. I'm talking more like you almost have to be very certain of yourself to make the argument that there's no God. So what do you call yourself if you're, well, humanism I love, but someone who think that the, you know, there's a lot of human nature that is drawn to that, and I'm very excited about this show, discovering some of that in the area.
Oh, thank you.
But it's kind of a joke, but it's kind of serious. It's
well, Mike, of course,
you have to be certain about something to be so, you know.
Well, you know, I can't say that I really came to a point where it was absolutely like from this moment on, I'm a non-theist, and before I wasn't sure. You know, I can't really put my finger on that moment, but I can say that it doesn't really take a lot of work to be an atheist. I don't have to convince myself of it. I don't feel weakened by other people's demonstrations of religiosity. But
there is,
of course, agnosticism, which is the feeling that, you know, there may well be a supreme being, I just don't know, and I'm not going to kill myself trying to figure it out. And, you know, agnostic can also mean that you're spiritual, but you don't belong to any particular organized religion. So there are people out there that are agnostic. There are people that start agnostic and then finish as atheists. They come to the conclusion after they look at it for a while that, indeed, I really can't find any evidence of a supreme being, and the idea doesn't work for me. So, but I can tell you as an atheist that, it's not something that troubles me. It's actually something that gives me great peace in life. And that's something I couldn't say about Catholicism. So, you know.
That's wonderful.
I'd also like to. Yeah, thanks for calling, Mike. Appreciate the call.
Can I suggest some look into Joseph Campbell's discoveries around the world of comparative religion and finding out that, heck, why are we arguing? We're all just talking about the exact same things, different poetry. So there it is.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I'd love to be able to extend Campbell's sentiments to humanists and religionists as well. Certainly, we have a lot more in common than we have that divides us. Okay, we have another call. I want to get to as many of you as I can today in our first hour together. Good morning, Liz. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I have another idea. I really believe that the gods and the goddesses and the angels, they're all aliens, and they're our ancestors. So how about that? Aliens are our ancestors. We all relate.
It's an interesting theory.
I thought I made it up, but maybe I didn't.
You know, I suspect that you're probably not the only one out there that thinks that.
Right.
And there are certainly a lot of us that would like to believe that we're not alone in the universe.
Of course not.
I would find it hard to believe with all the chances out there for life.
I hope we have higher beings than us.
I think it would be kind of hubristic to think that we're the only ones here.
I hope we get on beyond the food chain and the war.
Right. But I also have to wonder if they're not out there. Gosh, why aren't they coming down here and giving us a heart? Or maybe they are, right?
They do now and then. I'm telling you, I worry about our future.
Well,
we'll get it together.
Yeah, I think that's common to a lot of people, whether they're religious or not these days.
Exactly.
And, you know, certainly anything that brings you peace and doesn't harm others is okay with me, you know.
I'm for that, too. Hallelujah.
All right, then. Thanks, Liz.
The Great Awakening is coming.
All right. I'm ready.
Me, too. I hope others are, too.
Okay, Liz. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I consider myself a spiritual person, but I also feel that science has got it right. You know, and like all the other plants and critters on this planet, we're an evolved species. You know, there's life on Earth because water's at a liquid state, and I guess the spiritual part is all life comes from the earth, and so if there's a God, it must be the planet we're living on. We better get on taking care of it.
Well, certainly there could be worse things to believe in, eh?
Yeah, you know.
Than the planet, I mean. And, you know, as far as science goes, that's really been one of the great clashes of the ages, is between religion and science. And indeed, it was St. Augustine that said that reason is the enemy of God. And in a lot of ways, he really kind of nailed that one, because sadly today, you see too many religions taking open animosity towards science as if they can't coexist. And perhaps in certain cases, they cannot coexist with science. And, you know, they're telling people to choose religion over science. I think that's a dangerous trend, and it just adds to an atmosphere of ignorance. And that's one of the things, at least here at KABU, that we are always trying to struggle against, is ignorance. And to deny science, to me, I think, is a tragedy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Especially when you listen to even NPR, or, you know, even things that are supposed to be balanced programs. You know, they quite often speak quite highly of God and that whole idea, where, you know, science is a proven thing, you know, that Darwin a long time ago proved his point. I mean, it's not a theory anymore. He proved his theory. And it's been 100 years since Darwin, and science has just gone so much further than just proving evolution. I mean, it's...
And we have a lot more yet to learn as well. Yeah, we have a lot more, and it's so exciting to live in an age where you can do that kind of exploration without being hobbled by religious thought or religious hierarchy. You know, how many budding scientists were, burned at the stake or driven from their villages because it was a threat to the local shaman or, you know, priest or whatever religious leader, the scientific knowledge was a threat to his power. Indeed, what about the burning of the witches in the Middle Ages? You know, millions of women were burnt at the stake because of their knowledge of plant medicine and human biology, birth control, that sort of stuff, and that was a threat to the priestly class. So certainly the clash between science and religion is a serious subject that we'll be delving into in some detail, including intelligent design and the rest of the science deniers. So thanks for calling. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And you've been listening to Unfettered Thought here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Maura Cullen. I also do Radio Free Ireland occasionally, but I've been given this opportunity, and I'm delighted to be here today to hear from all of these great people. And let's see, we have time for one more call or two. Let's see what they have to say. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jaron, and I just wanted to say that I really feel like a lot of what humans seek in religion is our story, and that just basically like our own poetic relation to the world is something that we really value. And a lot of what we need to look at is, when does our story stop serving us? And I don't know, I guess kind of that's how I feel. Like, I'm a spiritual person, and that I've had my beliefs change throughout my life, and that I can change my story in order to make my life more meaningful and deep.
Sweet. Yes, indeed. I think that's a great way to look at it, John. Thanks very much for the call. You know, it's my belief as well that we all make our own meaning and intention in life. We make our own decisions about what matters and what doesn't matter to us and why. And the more control we take over that process, instead of leaving it to, you know, some fella up in the sky or whatever, I find that increases one's confidence, one's peace of mind, one's contentment and happiness in life, because when you make your own meaning, you necessarily have more control over how your life is going to go. Even if you are tossed and turned by crisis, you still have a better understanding and a better grip on how you're going to deal with things, rather than feeling like you are just in the grip of fate or destiny. Do we have time for one more call?
That's it.
Okay, good. I'm going to wrap it up. I haven't had a chance to... A couple of things I wanted to get to before we finish up. I want to thank all our callers today. It was great to hear from you, and you've got me thinking about a lot of things. I'm going to go home and do a bit of research and a bit of homework, and hopefully, if we can get this show going on a regular basis, we can start working through some of these fascinating questions that have been raised today. I guess just as a way of letting people understand a little bit more about where I'm coming from, I mentioned earlier that I grew up in an intensely Irish Roman Catholic household. And, you know, this had a great effect on me. I was many years getting over that. But there's a particular little story that I'd like to share with you real quick before we wrap it up. And it goes to my real motivation today for this program, and that is the desire for human justice and the search for a moral force in our lives. Well, I'll just tell the story and see if you can understand the point I'm trying to make. A number of years ago here at KABU, I had the opportunity to interview author Ken Kesey, who, you know, I think most of you will know was involved with, I'm forgetting their names now, but a group of real counterculture types that came out of the 60s. And thank you. Thanks to Todd Wilson, my faithful engineer. All right. The Merry Pranksters. So Kesey was here at KABU. He was about to start a play about the Wizard of Oz here in town. And I interviewed him. And afterwards, he was asking me a few things. And he asked me about my work on Radio Free Ireland. And I explained to him my desire to use the program and the example of Irish republicanism as a way to foster deeper understanding about the universality of the human struggle for justice. Well, Kesey, having known me for about all of 85 minutes, chuckled appreciatively and then solemnly intoned, "Maura Cullen, a woman on a mission from a God she doesn't believe in." And I always thought that was funny, very witty, but, you know, in the context of an introduction, it speaks to the depth of cultural penetration by religion into all facets of our lives. You know, being raised Roman Catholic, I thought for the first 6 or 7 years of my life that the whole world went to Mass every day. And sure, everyone in my universe did and celebrated the same holy days. It came as quite a shock to discover the fallacy of this childish belief. And that deeply implanted Catholic perspective haunts me still. I am and always will be a recovering Catholic. But I am an atheist and a humble KABU volunteer. And you know, it's a great privilege to be able to do a program like this and talk to all of you. I want to thank KABU for giving me this opportunity. I want to thank Todd Wilson for doing such a great job of engineering. And I hope to be back with you all soon. We're going to wrap it up with a little bit of NoFX. This one's called Leaving Jesus Land. Take care.